Everything you wanted to know about making comics in the future.
Tell that to your mom and dad tonight. They'll really be surprised.
It's Webcomics Weekly with Brad, Dave, Chris, and Scott.
You start dropping out, we're just going to harangue you.
Yeah, hold on. I'm doing...
You know what it is, Brad? I think I'm going to buy a new airport. I think that's what it is. I don't think it's my service. I don't think it's my computer. I think it's my router.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, so what I'm... Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to... Let me know when you guys are going to click record. Ready? One,
oh,
two, three.
I'm recording.
Right. One, two, three, record. All right, now I'm
recording. Right. I'm recording.
Everybody's recording.
All right. Magical times.
Feeling great. Started off on a good note. Yeah, right? Exactly.
Started off on positivity.
Let's just
you know
feel
what?
Good about ourselves.
Listen, I'm going to be Debbie Downer today. Webcomics Weekly, more like Webcomics Stinkly. That's my opinion.
Oh, don't go there.
Oh, my goodness, fourth grade. How could you say that?
Somebody had a bad day.
Somebody had a case of the Mondays.
You know what's really funny is I kind of did have kind of a bad weekend, and it was one of those things where nothing that doesn't just happen in a regular business week, but you know, a bad week, and so or a bad Friday, let's say. So Saturday, my brother calls me and says, "You know what? You need to get out of the house and away from the computer and stop just staring at a problem that you can't solve. You have people on the job. Let's go see a movie. We'll go see Paul Blart Mall Cop. You'll forget your problems for an hour. When you come back, you're going to feel a lot better about it." I'm like, you know what, Brian? You're right. Let's go. So he comes and he picks me up, and we're making Fletch quotes on the way to the theater, and I'm already laughing. Sugar Mr. Poon, and I call Brad, and we're making Fletch quotes. And we get in, and we sit down, and we're watching the craptastic one-hour pre-show where they're showing TNT new series clips And I turn to Brian and I say, "Does the picture look dark to you, or am I just getting old?" And he says, "I don't know. It looks kind of dark, but it's always darker than the movie." And then the previews come on, and those are about another half hour. And it's just like, the picture is just getting darker and darker. And I said, "Brian, the picture, I cannot even make it out." And he goes, "Yeah, something's up." And he goes, "But certainly they would turn on the lights and let us know the bulb was burning out or something. Maybe when the movie hits." And you guys know it's 45 minutes to an hour of waiting for the movie to start.
Right.
So all of a sudden the movie starts and we get 5 minutes into the movie and it's practically, it's like watching the movie through a blanket. And people are getting up and going out and Brian goes, I'll be right back. And he goes out and he comes back and he says, "They said they're fixing it. They said not to worry." Now we're 10 minutes into the movie, and all of a sudden, the lights come up, and some guy goes, "Hey, as you can tell, the light bulb is burnt out, and we cannot show this movie. So you can get a refund, or we have passes, or the next showing of Paul Blart's at about two and a half hours from now."
Oh, my God.
So I'm like,
Blart.
Yeah, and Brian goes, "Well, I guess we'll get our money back," and we step outside, and you know, everyone from that theater is now in line. So there's another 40-minute wait.
Oh, man.
And I turned to my brother and I said, "Hey, let's go see a movie. Let's forget our problems for an hour."
Can I tell you, though, what the biggest crime is in that whole story?
I know what it is.
That I went and saw Paul Blart?
Paul Blart Mall Cop, yes.
I like the idea that, like, God, something's got to take away these blues. Come on, Kevin James.
Come on, screenwriter.
Oh, yeah, I heard it is doing pretty good, though.
Yeah.
You know what? We watched it. It was okay. The thing that was surprising me was that there were a lot of kids there. And I turned to my brother and I said, "What is this rated? Isn't this like a Sandler-produced movie?" And I guess it was PG-13. There were a lot of kids there. But I would say it's kind of like watching an episode of King of Queens, you know? I mean, it's funny. It wasn't anything fall down hilarious. It's not real quotable.
Except for the title, that's about it.
I liked it. There were really funny parts, but we enjoyed it. But anyway, yeah, I could not win. I had a cloud over my head all weekend. What?
Well, can I tell you, because Glow and I do this constantly, because Chris does this because he's always coming up with new stuff too. But Glow and I are always critiquing titles, and our immediate critique of that title was, "Why didn't you rhyme his last name with Cop?"
Yeah. Well, yeah. Do you know what? I thought this has got to be an in-joke or something. So I went and I searched what is Blart outside of the the movie, and all I could come up with was references on Urban Dictionary, which was, I'm not saying that this is their idea, a fart that has blood in it.
Oh, come on.
That's in there, and it's got like 30 references, so I'm wondering.
You know what's funny is there's a whole grade, I'm going to call them like a class, of stand-up comedians. They aren't crappy stand-up comedians, but they're not really good ones. But you all know who they are. You've all seen them. And yeah. I looked up who wrote the screenplay for Paul Blart, and it was Kevin James and then this other comedian. And the comedian is the red-haired guy that was the voice of the cat on Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And if you see a picture of him, you'll know who I'm talking about. Dave, do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't, you know, now I got to go to IMDb.
That's,
hold on.
That's not a person. Nobody had that job. And Dave, don't bother. It's not on IMDb, because why would he put that on IMDb?
His name is Nick.
You know what's great, Chris? It's like that's his only listing on IMDb.
I was going to say, like, check me out at catvoice.com.
His name is Nick Bacay.
Okay. Well,
all right.
He is a winner. He is
when you see him.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
I feel good with this guy.
I'm going through the most circumlocutious route. Nick Bacay. All right, here we go.
Nick Bacay.
Nick Bacay. Finding you slowly, Nick. Oh, Nick, you're on. Yes, you're on Comedy Central at 2 a.m. every Thursday.
Exactly, exactly.
Doing a 5-minute set in Iowa's Chuckle Club.
Poor Nick.
Good job, Nick. You know what's helping, Nick? The red hair. That's not a dye job. Good job.
Hey,
you know what? Somebody's agent early on in their career sat them down a bit. Here's your stick. Drew Carey, he's got the glasses. You're going, Nick, you're going to be Mr. Red Hair. That's what you're going to be.
Red hair? That's what's been holding me back. My regular colored hair.
Conan O'Brien's got the bouffant. Drew Carey's got the glasses. You're gonna have the red hair and the no talent.
It can't be my material. It's gotta be my hair.
Can't be my material.
Thanks, Mom. This is a great idea.
Mom.
You're right.
I love it, Mom. She sounds like that. All right, here's what we're
doing. All right, come on, Nick.
She's smoking unfiltered off to the side.
You know what's hot right now? What's hot right now in Hollywood is gingers. You need to be a ginger. Red hair, pale face.
I read an article.
We call them daywalkers.
All right, here's what I'm thinking. We're going to write yourself a mall cop story. It's going to have a segue in it. The people love the segue jokes.
A segue.
Doesn't he have a segue in there?
Yes, he does. Oh. You've seen the same trailer I did.
Yes, the one funny moment is him scooting, switching across, trying to get behind the pillar. Anyway, all right, Web Comics Weekly.
Web Comics Weekly. All right, what are we talking about this time?
So we have our young and virile friend Scott in Dallas, Texas, had a good point, and so we all wanted to get this on tape before we talked about it too much at Dent. And what was that, Scott? What was that point? What was that thought?
Well, we were doing our pre-show, which is basically when we get together before we start recording, and we each take turns going, before we start recording, I just wanted to say, and we were talking about the,
Wouldn't it be funny, by the way, if the pre-show is just Brad haranguing us for 20 minutes, and then, like we were supposed to last time, it's like the Smothers Brothers, how the one that was the goofy one was actually the
mind.
Not only the mind, but like vicious apparently in real life in Hollywood.
And then,
Brad is like so cutting. He's like, God damn it, Chris, get it together.
I'm sorry.
We are on time once. We're like, Mr. Cracker, I'm so sorry, Mr. Cracker. And then immediately as the recording starts,
he's yelling at us. He's just
like,
I get to see Brett. Oh, shit, now I'm doing the double talk thing.
What?
Huh?
Scott was stomping all over you, Brett. It's time to get mad again.
Now listen, you guys. Wasn't there a Saturday Night Live sketch that was like that, where they had Ronald Reagan in the Oval Office? He was in there, and they were all smoking.
Oh, yeah,
cigs.
Yeah. Phil Hartman was doing that.
And we're going to go down there, and we're going to kick his ass. Mr. President, we've got a Girl Scout to see you. Well,
Hello, girl. I'm glad to get some cookies. Snap, snap, picture, picture. Okay, see you later. And by the way, we've got to get Manuel Noriega, too. And we...
yeah, I do remember
I could
that.
See, I like it with Brad where he's like, all right, guys, you got to get on the ball, all right? Now, I'm going to be back in 5 minutes. And we know that that's his get into character period. And then the three of us just sit silently in fear. Until he comes back and starts laughing.
And literally, I'm sitting in a bathing suit because I know I'm going to pee myself every time. You know? So I've just learned to roll with it. I can't fight my own fear of Brad Geiger. And so right. I'm just, you know what? All right, wife, I'm putting on the bathing suit.
Right, and it's just this unspoken thing
right.
between the two of you.
And then shamefully at the end of each show, I just kind of take off the bathing suit.
Right, and you open the door and you go to and you come to bed. You take a
I put on my PJs and I go to bed.
And she knows not to turn around and comfort you while you're sobbing. Because that embarrasses you even more.
That ruins my manhood even more.
Right.
Like, just leave me alone. You let me have this moment.
Oh man, Brad, why are you gonna be like that?
Why are you gonna be so mean?
Hey, I do what I gotta do to get results out of you guys.
Get results.
I get the job done. God damn it!
You want me on that podcast? You need me on that podcast?
Oh my God!
You just made America weaker, son.
All right, and let me get in character. Okay, I'm ready.
What would be awesome is that, like, one night he's so mad, he's like, all right, I get in character. Guys, you know what? Just start. I'll get there. I can't promise it. I might be real quiet at the first 20 minutes.
Or even better, it's just like him just, you know, haranguing us for 20 minutes. And we're like, all right, ready to record. And you just hear the little ring, ring, ring of him turning the nitrous oxide on in his office.
he's a professional. You gotta hand it to him.
Anyway, all right. That was a bad run.
That was a bad run. What are you talking about? I enjoyed that.
Anyhow, Dave made the comment.
Yes.
So I think I brought up the fact that maybe there should be a National Cartoonist Society for webcomics, and Dave said, "Yeah, it's called the National Cartoonist Society in 5 years when everyone else is gone and we're in." Was it 10 years, Dave?
Oh,
yeah, 5 to 10 years. Yeah.
5 to 10 years. So then I said, aren't you guys kind of scared that crap's going to start falling apart for us soon, too? Us meaning web entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And that our world's going to start crumbling like it's doing for print cartoonists right now. And all three of you went, nope. Let me roll around in my bags of money. Nope, I'm fine.
Polishing my gold watch.
And then I was like, really? Because it feels like I just...
And then we started recording.
What's with Bluetooth headset, guys?
And then we started recording. And then once Brad stopped yelling at us...
Yeah, and then Brad said, save it for the podcast. Come on, start recording. That's a good question for the podcast. No,
Chris,
but so the question.
Give me 20, and Chris is immediately going to sit up. Oh God! Just
crying. Yeah, I was going to say I'm sitting at my computer and I'm flinching like Brad's going to hit me, even though he's miles away.
The question I'm going to.
I'm still scared.
The question I'm. Oh yeah, you see Brad at the next convention. He's got a little legal pad with a little note from every time, date, and time that he wanted to smack you when you did something on the podcast. Now he's going to.
Now he's got a chance. Yeah.
And it's got the list is just. Show 51, show 50, yeah. Show 49.
All right, come here, Straub. Now don't flinch, otherwise I'll add one for each. Stick out your chin and you take it like a man. Show 52, Emerald City Comic Con. You interrupted Jim DeMonacus. Oh!
And Jim's like, that's really not necessary. You stay over there.
Right, Jim, you want yours?
You stay out of this.
All right, so why are we not worried about our stuff?
You shut your mouth, you Greek. Is Jim DeMonaco's Greek?
I made that joke last week, and he didn't laugh, which either means that I insulted him or...
It'll be that he gets that joke a lot, Dave. Gets that joke a lot.
It's just because Greeks have no sense of humor.
Oh, that's true.
I think. I'm pretty sure.
Hey, there goes... There goes 1/50th of our audience right there.
All right, whatever. Sorry, John Papadopoulos.
But that's the dad on
it
on,
was. George Papadopoulos was the name of the dad on Webster.
George Papadopoulos. I love that your mind didn't know enough Greek names, so the only place you could go was to Webster.
Hey, you know what, guys? We don't even need to talk about this topic because this is why we will never fail.
What?
Because there's just material everywhere. When are we going to run out? We're going for 20 minutes on the Greek names and Webster, for God's sakes.
The question I asked that you all decided would be really good for the podcast was, don't you feel that something could happen that would be a game changer for us, the way that it's a game changer for the newspaper strips right now? And you guys all were just like, no, not even considering it. And I'll be really honest. I'm sitting here looking at the economy and hearing about people getting laid off left and right and people cutting back. And I'm wondering if we're going to wake up one day and discover that something that we're taking for granted is suddenly gone. And that's a game changer for us. And it really screws us over.
Oh, I see.
Well, I can see a game changer coming, but not the economy. I don't think it's going to be the economy. I think if certain things happen with the way the internet is delivered to people's houses, in other words, some of those net neutrality issues that are always kind of popping along, those kind of things actually worries me a little bit more than the economy, and I'll tell you why. The economy, and we posted something like this on webcomics.com, there's something called the lipstick economy, and that is during times of a recession or a depression when money's really tight, lipstick sales boom because it's a cheap, it's a very cheap mood enhancer. Yeah. And I think that webcomics falls into that category. It's inexpensive. Visiting the site every day is free. But it's a mood enhancer. It's something that makes you forget your problems for a little bit. It's something that kind of gives you a sense of continuity and a continuous entertainment. I think that we can continue to build off of that. Not only that, but when we do offer a book or something in that $10 to $20 price range, again, the lipstick economy will kick in, and we're going to see those sales. I'm very confident about that.
You know what, Brad? I'm grateful that you're using the term lipstick economy, because when I took economics, there was another term for that type of a thing, and it was an inferior good. It's the reason why macaroni and cheese sales go up when people are broke. It's because it's an inferior good and it's cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been called worse.
I'll take it.
Brad's also been called inferior lipstick, so, you know, he's had some both thrown at him.
Evil Inc. now will carry a bullet at the top of the website. It says, inferior!
It just says, shop at Walmart, read Evil Inc.
Well, Brad, but the point you're missing is this. I'm not debating whether or not fans will continue to want our product. What I'm questioning is there going to be some game changer that's going to prevent us from delivering our product? It's not that I'm concerned necessarily. Here's a good example, okay? Look at Yahoo, okay? Yahoo has had a lot of problems lately. They tried to get Microsoft to buy them. Microsoft didn't. They laid off a bunch of people. A lot of people are wondering if Yahoo's on the way out. Well, if Yahoo's on the way out, there's a lot of services people use, including my store, that would be gone. And how many of those have to go away before suddenly there's a bigger cost now to running your own store?
I think a lot is the answer to that.
Okay.
Which
especially
is
because, like,
because we're not geographically located. And the beauty of that is, like, let's say I run a floral shop in downtown Detroit. Well, no matter what happens with the quality and the service that I give in my floral shop, I'm screwed geographically because all of Detroit or half of Detroit is going to be unemployed come 2009, you know? Our businesses, both in terms of the services we provide and use and our customer base, is so spread out geographically that I don't think any one loss of service, in your case like the Yahoo store, would be a game changer simply because even if Yahoo goes down, and they're having long-standing problems, but even if Yahoo goes down, Google's going to have a storefront system, and if Google doesn't have it, there's going to be some company in Canada that will have it, and if somebody in Canada doesn't have it, there'll be somebody in Israel that'll have it. You know what I mean? The idea is that somebody somewhere on the World Wide Web will have a service that you can just as easily plug into your server, and it'll work just as well. Or even if it doesn't work just as well, let's say the cost of using it goes up 10%. It's going to be painful, but it's not ruinous to you, you know?
Yeah, or even consider the idea that a lot of stuff, I mean, it's going to be kind of a pain, but you could then go back to running your own store and building your own store with off-the-shelf stuff, with open-source stuff.
Well, look, I mean, a lot of what we tell people, especially when we talk and whenever we're at a panel or we talk, and, you know, even in the book, you know, a lot of what we preach or what we've been preaching is, my God, guys, it's easier than ever to have a webcomic. I mean, hosting is so cheap, and look at things like WordPress, and I mean the Yahoo store and Google AdSense. I mean, for practically nothing, you can put up a website, and if you get a decent following, you can make some good pizza money. And my question to you is, what needs to change? What would change in the economy that would alter that so that it's no longer true and suddenly it's harder to accomplish that?
Okay. Well, this is actually a worthwhile exercise to do. I personally think that it would take such a dramatic fall in the economy that everybody we know would be in soup lines anyway. You know what I mean? That it literally would be the Second Great Depression.
It's not just affecting us. It would be affecting everyone.
It would literally be, yeah.
Don't ask me why, but I just pictured a soup line. We're all in the soup line, and we're just, like, terrified, and we're in, like one shoe and then a paper bag over the other foot. And there's Kevin McShane going, webcomics, am I right, guys?
Yeah. And somehow he's avoided it. Yeah, he's wealthy. What? Come on.
It certainly seems like I was discussing this with my brother the other day. I said, you know, my grandmother's 85 and she is European. So she didn't live through the Depression, but she lived through a world war, and she lived through immigration, and she lived through a lot, you know. And when you hear them talk about it, you know, and they talk about times being tough, they talk about rationing, and they talk about this and that. And I said to my brother, I can't picture anyone from our generation, even the generation before ours, and certainly not any of the generations after, ever even admitting that things were bad enough. Like, can you picture anyone from our generation putting up with a soup line? Or like, no, like, think about there's a great thing on YouTube you can see with Louis C.K. talking about how all this wonderful technology is wasted on people who don't appreciate it. You know, like, someone starts to send a text message and they hit the send button and they go, give it a second, it's going out to space and coming back, and you're bitching. Give it a moment. And, you know, it's like in a society of people that sit around texting each other, and we're worried about whether, I mean, we have first world problems. Can you see any of, you know, anyone from our generation or the generation previous dealing with, you'd think that almost like, well, there can't really be a depression because America would just be in denial about it. We'd all be, you know.
Yeah. We'd pretend this is how we want it.
It would essentially be, if we have another depression, it will be like, I Am Legend. It'll just be us setting up mannequins all over the city and pretending that everything's fine.
Yeah. No, but even worse, Scott, it's like I'm texting on a phone that's dead and into a service that no longer exists, you know?
Oh, no, you're not even that. You've got like a box of matches with the word phone written on it, or Nokia written on it, and you're talking into it.
Hey guys, I am Twittering you. Beep, 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 beep.
and then you're like, guys, gotta get home, gotta play World of Warcraft, and then you're in front of a cardboard box, so that through the perspective of it, when you look through it, you see your buddies all faking World of Warcraft, and then, you know, the next night
they're
you'll
across
be
the street,
yeah.
They're looking through their boxes,
and you're screaming left, right, attack.
Well, that's kind of a good point, though, because I mean, think about how just the web, I'll ask you this. If you had to give up cable or cable TV or web, which would you give up?
Oh, my God.
Cable TV.
Cable TV.
Gone. Yeah.
Because I have Hulu.
I mean, the web has really become an intrinsic part of how we live our lives. I think we're in a pretty good position to survive a whole lot of storms that are come down that aren't even going to touch us. It's going to have to go through layers and layers of other entertainment venues before it hits us.
This might be the most ironic podcast we ever record, because in 6 months when we're all eating rocks and
well, even worse, Chris, I was thinking about that in terms of irony. It's like, this is the last one we ever record because next week all four of us are just stone cold bankrupts. And so we're like, everything's fine, and this is the last thing anybody's hear from us. In the meantime, I'm like, you know, begging on a street corner for a crust of bread.
This podcast ends with me going, "Hi, this is Scott Kurtz. Dave Kellett is dead."
He ate his own hand.
No, well, listen, not so. I don't want this to come off as hubris, because it's not being prideful. Like, oh, this could never happen to me. I mean, the fact is, this does have the potential to go seriously south, and
guys. I mean, it kind of feels like we're already forgetting it. I mean, didn't we all kind of live through 1.com bust? Is it that conceivable that things could be crappy again? I mean, it used to be like. I mean, a good example is, think about how big my website is, and you guys know what I pay for hosting, okay?
Yeah.
I used to pay three times that much. Yes, three times that much when I did 3 gigabytes of data transfer a month. Now I do 3 terabytes. And, you know, things didn't always used to be so great, and that was, what, 8 years ago when hosting cost that much? Although maybe I don't understand why hosting is cheaper now. Maybe it's because the technology is just cheaper. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think a lot of that was a lot of that was perceived market, is that people thought they could charge it, they could charge it, because everybody thought that's what it should be. You know what I mean?
It
was sort of a false market. But here's what I was telling my dad the other day, because my dad, you know, God bless him, still doesn't really understand how or why I make a living doing this. And he's like, well, I don't understand. I mean, people could stop buying your books. And I was like, exactly, they could. But I said, here's the beauty of it. I don't need that many people to buy books for me to make a living. And he goes, what if they stop buying your art? And I said, I don't need that many people to buy original art for me to make a living. And he said, well, what if you start operating at a loss from the year before? And I said, here's the beauty of it. My operating costs are so small that even if they shot up 30, 40, even 50%, I'd still be making a living in the United States. Like, because we have no middlemen, I have no overhead virtually, you know, to carry. I have no lines of credit out. I've got, you know, everything's paid for in advance. My distributed sales are so dispersed and so minimal when they happen that I can be fairly sure that this economy can go even much further south and I'd still be fine. That's why I'm feeling confident about it.
Mm.
Well, and I'll put my money where my mouth would, or at least close to doing that. As I posted on my blog not so long ago, it was I found myself on the layoff list at my day job, and as scary as that is, with 2 kids and health insurance to worry about and a house payment and all this other stuff, I was definitely a little bit concerned about that. On the other hand, I had this overriding sense of excitement, because if I got laid off, it was going to mean that I had absolutely no excuse but to put 100% of my energy into my comic and really see once and for all if I could make it work. And the thing that I said to a couple of you guys on the phone was that if I can make it work in this economy, you can make it work in any economy. The nice thing about this is that if you can survive for the next 2 years, you've got absolutely every indication that you're going to be able to survive for the long haul. Why did that make you groan?
Because, Brad, listen, I don't know what's wrong with my brain or why my anxiety is the way it is, but just hearing how you were put on a layoff list and you're like, well, I certainly was concerned. I wasn't put on the layoff list. I'm just hearing about how you were and are now off of it and you're okay now, and that just gave me the trots. I want to take a magazine into the bathroom and sit for a bit.
You You can't be like that. I know one thing beyond a shadow of a doubt, and that is that no matter what comes up, I will be able to earn money somehow to support my family. And if that means taking jobs that I don't want to take, that's what it's going to be. And if it means an opportunity to work on the comic full time and see if I can really make that go if I put 100% of my effort into it, then that's what it's going to be. But
yeah,
one way or another, I know that I will make it happen. There's no other choice.
Yeah, I think that's why we're seeing stuff come up lately. Like I've seen a couple of things linked in Fleen about how, you know, newspaper cartoonists are worried about this kind of thing. We web cartoonists have had to do it kind of, you know, tooth and nail, figure out where the money is going to come from this month, sort of a thing. Whereas newspaper guys, they're used to, I work within this system and I get paid.
Right.
And they don't know what it's like for that to go away. We never had anything that was going to go away. You know,
we
have ourselves.
It's really funny that you say that. You know, there's been many, many times in the history of PvP being around where I've lost my mind because I had one of those moments where I'm like, well, this is it. This is the end. I don't get to do this anymore for a living. Something's changed or a revenue stream has dried up or I'm worried that it's going to. And I'll sit down with my wife and I'm just like, oh God, this is awful. This is awful. What's going to happen? And I just, what have I done to us? And I don't have any other, you know, I've been doing this for 6 years now and I didn't, you know, that's 6 years I haven't been in the workforce. And how am I going to find a job? And she always comes over and she puts her hand on my shoulder. She hugs me and she says, hey, you've always found a way. We'll find a way. We'll keep this going. We will absolutely keep this going. You know, you've always, when a door shuts, you've always found, you know, another door. When one opportunity goes away, you find another opportunity. I mean, we've always found a way to keep it going. We'll find a way to keep it going. Right, and yeah. I just always thought that was something she said to make me feel better. And then she turned the corner and she's like,
She's immediately.
She uses that curly. Curly.
The tie is spinning on her.
No, the one where Curly lays on the ground on the side and starts kicking his leg, starts walking in a circle.
And then you're like, you round the corner, you're like, what are you doing like that? And she goes, the confidence dance. It's fine. Go back to
Well, so here's what I between the lines of many conversations that we've had before, though, is that one of the reasons why, and rightfully so, that newspaper and print cartoonists get nervous is because they are used to somebody writing their checks for them, you know. Whereas I think the webcomics lifestyle is generating the checks for yourself. And ultimately, that means knowing where the money comes in, knowing how much it is, knowing, and all of that is surrounded by an entrepreneurial mindset. So what I'm saying is they're used to some salesman going out and making XYZ work for them. We're used to going and figuring out what XYZ is. And that entrepreneurial outlook helps in downtimes because we'll figure out how to get scrappy or scrappier, as the case may be.
And not only can no one lay you off, but nobody can take away what you've learned through 10 years plus, in your case, and 9 years for, I think, the others of us. No one can take away what we've learned. They can't take your job away, and they can't take your knowledge away. And everything that you've learned up until this point, you can apply to open another door.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, you know, as I've gone along, I've always been very open to talking to print cartoonists, and I've talked to a bunch of them, and some of them have been very open as to how I make my money, and it'll always be the same conversation, like, well, how do you make money? I mean, is it all advertising? And then I'll say, well, and then 10 minutes later, they're like, stop talking. You might as well stop talking now. I do not care anymore. I am not going to do that. I don't want to do that. That sounds like that sounds horrible. How do you do that? Your whole day is made up of just spinning plates and freaking out and worrying about this and, you know, like you can never count on anything sticking around and it's changed from year to year and how do you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, he's like, well, why would I want to do that? And I guess now you can walk up to him and say, you see all this crashing around you? That's why.
You know?
Well, yeah.
Well, and that's we've kind of said this before, but let me take a harsher tone for a minute. I mean, yes, you don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. None of us want to do that. But the fact is, I personally think we're heading towards a world where, at least for the next 5 to 10 years, there are going to be far fewer big traditional media opportunities for an artist. You know,
yeah.
you got to make your own magic in the world right now, because I tell you what, Harcourt's going down. Random House is having trouble. You know, DC and Marvel are squeaking by. You know, a lot of these independent publishers for comics are having trouble. So, you know, if your plan is, oh, well, there will be a company that will make this happen for me, well, then you're in deep shit, you know, to take a harsh tone on it.
Yikes, yeah.
Well, geez,
I agree,
Dave.
Though.
Wow.
Dave, we didn't want to go there, but I guess, wow.
Sorry, I channeled pre-show Geiger there for a minute.
Oh, yeah,
well,
now
pre-show and during-show Geiger, I agreed with you 100%.
Well, yeah. I don't know. The bottom line is, for me, is that I'm not worried, Scott, to answer your initial question, because I rely on me. And this sounds like it's hubris, and it sounds like I'm being egotistical, but it's not. So I'm not scared, because I know I will work 80 hours a week if I have to on my comic, figuring out a way to make money, you know,
yeah.
Because it's me. It's not me relying on some sales staff or me, you know, waiting for my editor to do something. It's me working my ass off, and maybe that means me working a little bit harder, but it's for something that I absolutely am passionate about and love, and quite frankly, don't mind working hard on.
Yeah. No, that makes that's all it boils down to. It's the idea that we don't have to count on anybody. There's no system that, well, as long as, you know, this thing that I have no control over stays viable, then I'll be fine. No.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of, you know what it is? None of us are the Johnson account, where if the Johnson account goes away, our job is ruined. You know, we're fine. My Johnson account is 10,000 Sheldon readers. Sorry, this is going into bad territory. But what I'm going to say is,
Johnson, go ahead, tell us about your Johnson account.
Dave, you're not worried about that.
I don't understand. Are you telling me I'm out of business? Yeah. What about the Johnson account, Scott? It's not the Johnson account that puts you out of the business. You're out of business on account of your Johnson.
Oh, man, best turn of that. Phrase. Best. That's going in an evil ink. What I was going to say, though, is there is no Johnson account, but because I have 10,000 Sheldon readers named Johnson. You know what I mean? Like, it would take all of them falling apart for me to lose my business.
Well, not. What about those of us who don't have 10,000 Johnsons, Dave?
Suddenly, I. you know what's funny? I picked the worst possible last name. You know what? I should have done the Richard account. No, I'm sorry. Hold on. I should have done the. Never mind.
Dave. Anyway, I think what you're trying to say is that there is no penis balls account, and
right. So if I'm working on the new General Motors testicular account, then what I'm sorry. All right, that's enough of that.
Guys, we're all Wangs. I think I learned.
on Wang computer, that would have been a good one. So my point was that I'm not afraid, because it's ultimately up to me, you know, and
yeah.
I think there's something empowering about that in times of trouble.
That's why Brad was excited. That's why I would be excited.
I
really was. A long time. Well, I kept it for my wife, because it was right during Christmas. But after everything had blown over and it was clear that I was going to be able to keep my job, we talked about it, and I said, you know, and it's easy to talk about in hindsight, but I said, you know, I would have had a certain number of months severance, and I would have taken the first third of that and just put it 100% into the comic. And then I would have at least known at that point, you know, was it going to happen? And then if not, then I'd take the rest of that severance and put it into looking for another day job or maybe building a freelance system to work. But honest to goodness, I to this day, I still kind of sit and think and wonder whether maybe I should have just taken the buyout, because it's not like the newspaper is going to suddenly get better. Sometimes I wonder if I wouldn't have been better off taking the buyout, because if they declare bankruptcy, there is going to be no buyout. It'll just be don't show up to work tomorrow.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes, though, I think you need to give yourself permission. I think you should fire yourself. inside. And I'm going to write a self-help book about that.
Well, in some ways, I already have.
Brad, absolutely under no circumstance are you supposed to fire yourself. Let me just go ahead and be the one to tell you.
Can I tell you, Brad, though, as a married man, that if you go home and tell your wife that you fired yourself, you should worry about the Johnson account.
Please do not fire yourself.
Oh, I didn't mean like literally. I meant as a way of thinking. Stop putting any effort into your job.
I just wanted to use the Johnson account joke one more time.
Too early for a callback, Dave. You gotta wait till the end of the show.
When the sentence is not even finished yet, it's not technically a callback.
You just at intervals, you just Johnson.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying like, I'm sorry, I'm like three clicks behind. You're saying like Brad should just go into work and just short timer it.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Ham and egg it up.
Just ham and egg it.
And then when the boss is like, Geiger, what the hell is your deal like? I mean, you were really short-timing it. I mean, you know, I don't know if you realize, but, you know, your name was on the block, and you really dodged a bullet. And he's like, let me stop you right there, boss. Web comics. And then he just walks out.
All right.
Why are you clean? Every morning I see you come in here, clean your desk out, and then the end of the day you put all this stuff back.
It's a psychological catharsis for him.
Yeah.
It just makes me feel better.
But you know what? I want to clarify one thing because I don't want this to come across like it's all going to be honey and golden cakes for the next couple of years.
Grasping for what nouns.
I know. I was really trying to. Like, so you know what it was? I couldn't remember that biblical phrase of milk and honey. God damn it. 10 years later I remembered it. I don't want people to think that I'm sitting here going, I'm not worried because it's gonna be the land of milk and honey. It's not. I anticipate that it's, you know, even though I'm planning for growth, I'm anticipating that there's the potential for what, Brad?
Oh,
what?
Brad.
Growth of the Johnson account?
That's still on it.
Let me just do
Dave,
that for
Dave,
Brad.
That, Dave, that is your SkyMall now. I'm sorry. That is yours.
Oh, wonderful. I'm now tied to the Johnson account. Good. How appropriate. How good. How wonderful.
I'm so sorry.
But you were saying.
Pick
you were
it
saying.
Up from milk and honey.
I actually don't remember what I was going to say. Oh, and I honey. So, no, listen, because I said before in my resolutions, I am planning for growth, but if the – God damn it, Brad, still laughing quietly way off the mic. I love that. If there is a reduction in income over the next couple of years –
shrinkage.
It's not,
shrinkage.
It's not ruinous because, and I can't stress this enough, my operating costs are almost as close to zero as you can get for a business by any traditional measure. So if I make, I'm not going to throw out numbers, but if I make 20, 30, 40% less, it will hurt, but it's still a livable wage, you know?
And
so it's survivable.
Right, and I think there's a little bit of that Midwest mentality that we can all kind of bring in there too, and that is, I think we could all tighten our belts a lot tighter than they are right now.
Yeah.
Take a look at last Christmas. I don't know about you, but we were right in there with everybody else. We spent more than we probably should have for Christmas. We're still a long way from really feeling any pain, and I know we could tighten our belts more and really get into that kind of pioneer spirit of really going hardcore. We're nowhere near hardcore yet.
On the Johnson account.
I teed up that nobody could.
Yeah, that was no. But you're right. This is, you know, in a recession, it's a terrible time to hear this advice. But actually, when my wife and I were trying to buy a house, a long time ago, we started watching the Susie Orman show, and she's a ridiculous human being in terms of her presentational style, but her basic core advice is actually pretty good. And one thing that we took to heart from her, since both Glow and I are artists and rely on artist incomes, which, as you guys know, can totally fluctuate up and down month to month, the one bit of advice we took to heart from her and have slowly been building up over the years is the idea of having 6+ months of living expenses saved in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And for artists, and I'm not directing it towards anyone in particular, I'm just saying, for artists, there is no better feeling to know that you can make no money for 6 months, and you'll still be fine because of that cushion. And slowly but surely, it takes a while, especially at first, to build up that backup, and it's painful. But you cut off cable, and you cut off going to restaurants, and you pay with cash instead of credit cards for 7 months. And you'll find that you're saving up $500 here, $1,000 there, and slowly but surely you've got 6 months of living expenses. And as an artist, that has been invaluable to my psychological health to have that.
Mm.
So it's not advice anybody wants to hear in a recession, but if you can do it, penny pinch now so that you have the backup funds for a really dark day, you know?
No, that is good advice.
Especially as artists. But that's anyway, that's not me being preachy. It's just me saying my mind has been calmer because Glow and I have been doing this for the last couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
Well, here's the question, Scott. You brought this topic up. Do you feel a little bit better now, or are you still worried?
Well, no. Listen, I mean, I've got mental problems, guys. I'm never going to feel better. I mean,
like, guys, I was never worried.
I just needed to kickstart a conversation for this podcast.
Thanks, guys. It looks like the magic was inside me all along.
are we just cut Scott's house and he's just rubbing money on his forearms for no reason? He's like, no, I'm fine. Don't worry about Scott Kurtz. Scott Kurtz is fine.
I'll be fine. Yeah, great.
No, I think I'll always be worried, and maybe that's why I won't have a problem. But, I remember when PvP first started paying off, and it was during the dot-com boom, and it was when UGO was sending me really big checks, and the bulk of my day was I would wake up, I would draw a strip for that day, I would post it, and then I would do nothing. And that was my day. For 4 months, that was my life. I did one strip, and that was it. I didn't care. I didn't think about the craft of webcomics. I didn't think about business revenue streams or anything like that. And then just kind of loving life. Just like, this is going to be awesome forever. And went to an event, met my friend Gary. This was back when video games were so popular, they were having tournaments to make it a sport.
Professional Gamers League.
Yeah, the Cyber Athletic Professional League. It was here in Dallas. And Intel and NVIDIA and all these guys, they would pay, $100,000, $200,000 prize for the tournaments, and they were professional gamers. And I was sitting here talking to my friend Gary, who I met at one of those events, and he's like, yeah, well, when the bubble bursts, we're all going to have to figure out what to do. And he's like, but you'll be in a really good position, Scott. You know, we're kind of screwed, but you're not. And I said, well, why am I in a good position? And he said, well, our websites are just video game news. We're just linking to each other. But you actually create something. You'll always be able to create something that people want. We are just benefiting from all the money that's coming in for traffic. But once that goes away, we don't have any product. And I said, well, why would the money go away? And he said, oh, well, it's all venture capital money. It's just all companies trying to make a profit, and they're not going to, and then the bubble will burst. But you should try to get as much money as you can now. And that's when he was trying to convince me to essentially create a keen spot over at UGO and get whatever my CPM was. I think it was like a guaranteed $3 CPM, and give all the cartoonists $1.50 and then make a ton of money. And he was like, here, look, you could make $250,000 a month if you get these comics on your hosting, and then let UGO advertise, subsidize it. And I said, well, if they're not making any money, aren't I just stealing money from UGO then? He's like, well, no, they raised venture capital. They're paying you, and they hope to be profitable, but they probably won't be. But in the meantime, why not get as much of the money as you can? And then I went home and started throwing up and started thinking about it. And I've never returned to that complacency. It scared the hell out of me when I realized that I was an idiot. I mean, I thought I was a genius. You know, I had found a way to make my living as a cartoonist, and I had showed everybody, my art teachers, all my friends that wanted to be cartoonists that gave up and went to college finally and got real jobs. I mean, I had shown everybody up, and I realized I was just a complacent, naive idiot, and that I was never going to go back to that again. So do I feel better? I guess I can allow myself to feel a little bit better. I mean, No.
You know, listen, to go back to a conversation we had a long time ago where we were talking about only the paranoid survive, it's good to be nervous.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to be scared about you know, it's because they were complacent that print cartoonists are going to have a problem in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, they should have been looking at their contracts and going, wait a minute, what am I signing away with web stuff? Or how long am I in this, you know, into this contract for? Or, you know, is there a way for me to back out if you drop below X amount of income? And, you know, the smarter ones did. So it's because you're not complacent that PvP is going to be fine.
Well, I hope so. Like I said, when I get nervous, it's not what I'm doing. It's things that are out of my control. I mean, just look at what happened to me with this weekend when my website went down for a little bit and I couldn't figure out why. It's not because I'm afraid the website's going to be down forever and I'm screwed. I know we'll figure it out. But it's because that's out of my control. I don't know how to do that. I don't know what servers are. I don't understand shelling in and MySQLs, and I only know enough to kind of be dangerous. So it's not the stuff that's in my control I'm worried about. It's the stuff that's all out of my control, which is what you're not supposed to worry about, right? Because you can't control
anyway.
Well, no,
you gotta worry about that. You just have to try and minimize what's out of your control.
Yeah. Right?
You know, and that's what we're doing as web cartoonists.
And each one of us, Scott, if we were to probe, I mean, for you right now, it's server databases. But if we were to probe for each of us right now, what our weak spot is, all four of us could talk about it. For me, it's frickin' QuickBooks. No matter how much I learn that program, it always scares me that I'm doing something major wrong in terms of my bookkeeping. So. Mm-hmm. You know, and each one of the four of us would have something. You know, for Chris, it's last week he was probably worried about toys, or for Brad, last week he was probably worried about printing a fifth book. You know, and there's always a new fear, but it's that fear that keeps.
Well, and you know what? That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, Dave. Was that big scare with the toys? You know.
Yeah.
That was the kind of stuff that I'm worried about, and why when you wake up and CNN's like, oh God, now this has happened. For the people listening that aren't aware, there was this big new law that passed that basically said, it doesn't matter who you are, if you make a toy, if you sit in your house and buy yarn and make little yarn toys and sell it, by law you have to have it pass testing procedures that say it's safe for kids, even if you're not selling it to kids necessarily. And it went into effect February, right?
Yeah, in a couple of days it will, like in a week
yeah.
it does.
And so...
Yeah, they I don't know if you guys know, by the way, but they put a temporary reprieve on it for a one-year reprieve on the law.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yesterday they did.
Oh, that's good. Well, that'll help some of us. I called the manufacturer of my plushes, and he wrote me back, and he assured me that they are on top of all of those laws, and that any toy they sell to me passes all those tests, and they will provide me documentation that says that if I want it. And that they could even look up to make sure the stuff that I made from 2 years ago was safe. So, but like I said, that's out of my control. And that's what I don't want to wake up to, which is, you know, hey, you know what? To boost the economy, we went ahead and allowed that bill to pass that says now that ISPs can tear off the internet. You know, and that changes the game. Or, hey, you know, hosting is really expensive now, and that completely changes the game. Or
right, yeah.
Well, that's what I think Brad's point at the beginning of the show was something like that, right, Brad, in terms of fearing the black swan events, the stuff that you can't see coming.
Right.
What's a black swan event? That's a cool term.
That sounds ironic.
Well, there's sort of like, you know, everyone, like the idea of a non-black swan event would be like, would be like the year 2000 changeover. It's like you could see it coming. So even though it would, you know, was potentially a catastrophe, everybody saw it coming. Yeah. But the black swan theory is that it's this really huge impact, like almost impossible to predict event that no one saw coming, that really is a huge paradigm shift in the way things happen in history. So it would be like in warfare, one side had no idea that the crossbow was coming and got just boned because the crossbow was on the other side, you know?
Crossbow or even.
Like for the Aztecs, the arrival of the Spaniards was a huge black swan. So, you know, because it totally changed their entire culture. So a black swan event is something that you don't see coming, but that completely sideswipes everything that you had built as far as either a culture or a business model or a lifestyle or something like that.
Yeah, for print cartoonists, the black swan was us.
Well, you know why I get mad about that? Is that for them, it wasn't a black swan. You could see this coming with print for the last 15 years.
Exactly.
That's why, yeah. even though I still extend a hand to print guys that ask, there's a part of me that's like, you haven't been listening to us for 15 years, you know?
Don't you just want to leave a neener neener message on Ted Rawls' answering machine?
No, because what?
Well, and not only that, but it's been insulting. I mean, we've had to listen to these T-shirt salesman comments and stuff like that from these guys that don't get it. And at the same time, really, if they would just kind of calm down and listen to some of the stuff that we're saying, there's no reason that any one of them should be having serious problems.
Right.
Thank you for calling the phone of Ted Rawl. I am very busy writing offensive cartoons. Please leave a message. Beep. Aw, snap. Aw, snap. Aw, snap. What up, Rawl? Snap. It's Kurt. Snap. Snap. Snap, snap, snap. Oh, I'm an editorial cartoonist. Nobody wants to see my cartoon about how when Schwarzenegger became California, the gap in his tooth was California. Boo-hoo. George Carlin died, and he's at the pearly gates, and they don't want the dirty words in there. Where? Nobody wants my cartoons. Where? Beep.
And then it was like, those are pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Just so you guys know, Scott left that exact message on my machine last week about Sheldon. So,
oh, boo-hoo, like, nobody wants my cartoons about the duck and the pug. Wham. What? If I left the message on your machine, it was for certain not that. It was, oh, boo-hoo. Nobody wants my fart jokes. I better tell me about ducks.
I like how you sounded vaguely southern. Tell me about ducks.
Well,
about the ducks.
It just starts out with ooh. Hey, let me pick your brain about that.
Boo hoo, neener neener. Hey, can you give me a call back? About a thing real quick.
Where did you get your last book printed? Because that came out really nice.
and then you realize how you started the call and you go back to it. All right, so give me the email of that guy, and all right, I'll talk to you tomorrow. And oh, boo hoo! By the way, boo hoo!
By the way, we're cool. Still cool.
Well, listen. I mean, the bottom line is that if I look down the different paths I could have taken in my life, if I had not gone down this path, if I had stayed in the private sector and done tech support or maybe been a graphic designer, there might have been the illusion of stability, but I don't know that I can honestly say that my current career path is any more or less stable than any other career path I would have chosen.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that.
I mean, you know, my brother was working at a company that's been around for years. It's called the Overhead Door Company. And if you've ever been in a warehouse and you've seen one of those garage doors that has got the chain and pulls up to practically any automatic garage door in a house, they produce it. They make it. I mean, it's a stable company. It's been around forever. And he had this wonderful job there. And Brian wanted more money, and they couldn't give it to him, and he worked really hard, and he asked for a raise. I think he asked to be bumped up a significant amount, and they said no, and then he was cool with it but disappointed. And then he got offered a job at a .com, a company that basically works to make software for people selling cars online. So it seemed to me like he was leaving a company that wasn't going anywhere to take a chance at a company that was going to be a lot of money. I mean, almost two times what he was making. but it just seemed so precarious. And just like at any given moment, it could go away. Like, what if suddenly automobile companies don't care about their Google SEO ranking anymore, and or the services that you offer? What if the whole game changes? Or what if the people that made your .com company are only looking to get it to a certain size so they can sell it in 3 years, and they sell it and everybody's fired? I mean, why would you give up stability for that? But he did it anyway. And he loves his job. The company's doing great. They're not going anywhere. And his old company keeps calling him up and having him come in on the weekends to do contract work, and they keep offering him his old job back. So, yeah, you know, my advice to my brother was completely wrong. I mean, sometimes, I don't know, sometimes playing it safe isn't always playing it smart. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of things about stability and safety and control that's all an illusion. Maybe you're better off spinning the plates. I don't know.
Well, can I tell you what was, and I know we're starting to run long on the show, but this was a really big, insightful moment for me in terms of my career, is that I always knew I wanted to be a cartoonist, but for about 7 or 8 years, I worked at Mattel, right? And I loved that job. As you guys remember, I loved that job. It was a fun place to work. The products were great. The people were really creative and fun. But one event that really drummed home for me that I could not and should not make that my career, because, you know, who knew if cartooning was ever going to work out for me, was a really good friend of mine who was 63, a really genius toy designer. His healthcare costs, and I know this was the reason, his healthcare costs started to get really high for he and his family, and he was laid off and, you know, in a downturn in the mid to late 90s. And it just, it, you know, it's one of those things that you hear over and over again, that you are a number, no one truly cares for you in corporate America. But when you see it up close, it really brought home for me that I could not trust corporate America to provide for my future. And that if I wanted some feeling of stability, even if it wasn't stability, I had to do it for myself. And that was a big event for me in terms of pursuing webcomics, was that, you know, I wanted to build something that my efforts 30 years from now were still relying on my efforts 30 years previous, you know?
Right.
Because ultimately corporate America they'll cut you like a shiv, if they, you know, if they have to. And we're seeing that all over America right now, you know, and all over the world, is that ultimately it's the bottom line, and you are a number. So I'd much rather be working for myself, where if I make 20% less money, it's not that I don't lose my job, it's just that I make 20% less money.
Have I told that story on this podcast, Chris, or was it on The Affirmation, when I was driving with Angie and I asked her if she resented what I did for a living?
I don't remember. I don't know that you've told it here, though.
We were driving one day, and Angie was talking about her job, and then she was talking about everything we had to do for upcoming con season, and it kind of dawned on me in that you think a million things in a split second, that, you know, all of Angie's vacation time is going on conventions with me, and she comes home from work and she worries about the business, and she does so much to help me. And I wonder if, you know, for me, it's a lot of fun, but this isn't her game. This isn't her dream. You know, she's kind of helping me with mine. And I thought to myself, I had this horrible thought, like, oh my God, what if she loves me and she's doing it for me, but she resents it? What if there's a part of her that resents it? And 10 years from now, you know, I'm going to wake up one day and she's going to be throwing crap in my face and saying, you know, I'm sick of this. I don't want to be a cartoonist's wife or something. So I turned to her and I said, do you resent my job? And she said, what? And I said, well, what I do is pretty fun for me and it's stressful and I worry about it, but I love it. And you spend a lot of time helping me with it. And we've always worked on my dream. It's always kind of been the Scott Show guest starring Angie. And I'm sure you have dreams, and some of them seem kind of silly, like you always wanted to be a marine biologist, but why not go for that? Why not go back to school? But that's not going to happen, is it? Because we're always working on my dream, and do you resent that? And I'm bracing myself, you know, for this answer. And she goes, oh, no, no way. Thank God this came along, because you were horrible in the private sector. You could not play the game. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's, I mean, I could play the game. She's like, no, you got fired or laid off from every job. And let's be honest, you were fired from every job you had. Ever since we have been married, you can't play the game. You don't understand the politics. You just don't understand why people can't just be straight and genuine and honest. And that's not how it works. No, thank God this is working out for you, Scott, because you just don't survive anywhere else. You just can't do it. No, I, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right. You resent it a little bit. I know you do. Come on. I would have been fine, the private actor.
Talking about that whole marine biologist thing.
Yeah. Why don't we go work on the red tide? Shut up.
I like how it potentially backfired on you in a way you totally didn't expect. Just like, you were a failure. Everything else you ever tried. You would, and you're like, whoa, all right, I'll slow down here. Okay, now hold on.
No, I was really, listen, you can ask her. I was really offended. Like, I was mad for a day or two. And she's like, why are you so mad? She was like, you need to get over it. You were bad. Things are going great now.
Thanks to you.
But so now I've told that story. Don't let me tell it again on a future podcast. Next week, it's like, hey, guys, this week's subject, we're talking about ad solutions. And I'm like, guys, I told you that story about my wife. Anyway, I was asking her about my job.
I got a funny story about lettering.
Back to the Johnson account.
That's not the way to bring it back,
the
Dave.
Johnson.
Oh, that was the worst callback ever.
You guys remember when I said Johnson account?
You know what it is? That was like me, like being the guy that's trying to give himself a nickname. You know that guy? Like, you know what? You know we should call me Scooter because of that scooter that I always drive. We should call me Scooter.
What was it, Chris? What was the name of your Blutowski character?
Mooner.
Mooner.
Guys, you should call me Mooner because it's good. Nah, Chris, that's no good. That's not funny. Hey, all right, Mooner's signing up, Mooner guys. All right. No, stop. That doesn't
Chris,
work.
Chris, eat your moons over Miami and sit down.
Oh, man, I love these. These are delicious moons. Mooner over here, right?
Mooner.
Right.
What are you guys talking about? Sorry, I didn't mean to be such a Mooner right there. I know you guys hate that.
No, all right, Chris.
I really Moonered that up. Oh, that's a Mooner move. we should call those Mooner moves. We should call them Mooner moves.
No, you know we're not. Just, we're gonna go ahead and get out of here.
I guess I really Dwighted it up back there. No, I really Shrewded it up.
What is that? Shrewded.
Shrewded it. Hmm.
Well, that's what everybody's calling it when
you mess up. I guess they call it really Shrewding it up. Hmm.
Just call me Mooner. Everybody else does pretty soon.
Pretty soon.
Just call me Moon. Everybody else is gonna.
He's gonna.
Everybody else better.
Well gents, my friend, I was gonna say it's at an hour and a half, and Brad is probably in the wee hours of the Philadelphia morning. Shall we call
let's
it a?
Go ahead and do that.
Before we go, let's let you do. Do we want to plug our upcoming Washington D.C. appearance?
Absolutely.
And your upcoming New York appearance as well.
Oh, yeah,
February
that's right.
6th, February 6th through 8th is going to be Scott and I at New York Comic Con. I'm going to be in small press, and Scott's going to be over with, what's that comic they do again? Penny Arcade. Wow, 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 wow. And then the following weekend in Washington, D.C.
Oh, wait, no, hold on,
Capcom.
But clarify, Brad, it's what? Not quite Washington, D.C.
It's Arlington.
Oh, that's right,
Arlington,
I shouldn't
Virginia.
Do that. It's Arlington,
very
Virginia,
close.
You're right.
KatsuCon.
We're at KatsuCon in Arlington, Virginia, Valentine's Day weekend, February 13th through the 16th.
Yep.
And that's going to be Chris, Dave, and I. So two chances to see Half Pixel Crew people in the East Coast.
And Scott is on the Business of Webcomics panel at New York. Right, Scott? What day is that so people can go catch it?
Phil. Keep going. Come on. Stretch it out. Let's go.
It is on Friday in panel room 10 from 3:15 to 4:15. That's pretty arbitrary. 3:15 to 4:15?
I know. 3:32 to 4:38.
They had a magic game that's running long there.
A magic game?
Yeah.
Would that be The Gathering?
Ooh. Yeah, The Gathering.
For your information, Magic the Gathering is an incredible game of mental dexterity. It's like chess,
with
a million pieces.
I told Scott this, okay. But I'm serious about this. When we go to Emerald City Comic Con, I want to actually play Dungeons & Dragons with you guys because I've never actually played it in my life.
Yeah,
so.
But that's cool, though. This is not like Magic.
Magic the Gathering is fun until you decide this was awesome playing with your cards. I'm going to make my own deck. And then you realize how much money you have to spend? Yeah.
Exactly.
Not so great.
Not so great. That sounded like a Mystery Science Theater. all right, gents. So New York Comic Con, KatsuCon. Oh, and we're doing two panels at KatsuCon, but I don't have that information in front of me, I don't think.
Are we doing two?
Enjoy. Enjoy KatsuCon.
We're doing, we're doing
two great panels you're going to love.
You're gonna love the way we smile. And that's
you'll love the stuff we're made of.
No, we'll have links on Sheldon Evil Inc. and I almost said ChrisStroud.com and on Starslip. So
they would be there too. That would be a safe one.
I would it. All right. All right. Webcomics Weekly.
See ya.
Episode 53. We're still looking for that lost episode with Gary's mustache on it. That's coming up.
Yeah, day two. Set your alarm clock.
Well, wait a minute. Someone's got that right? Didn't.
I've got that. I just haven't uploaded yet. I have found it, and as of Friday night, I've got the password, so I will upload it this week.
Cool.
Good man. Brad Geiger to the rescue.
And then we can upload this one. I mean, we can upload it tonight if you want.
Let's just do
it. Yeah.
Do you want me
Let's
just to upload my half
Let's
of it?
Let's just do it.
Or my
are
side
hungry.
Of it?
I say we just do it.
Yeah. Let's
and then once we've
way.
Caught up, we'll put the nice audio together.
Yeah.
Although, you know what? We were all pretty clear tonight, so this would probably be a good one.
Yeah. All right. I'll bumper the hell out of it at the beginning and then throw it up.
Sounds good.
This is episode, what is this, 53 now?
Probably.
53.
Yeah.
I think.
What should we title it?
Black.
The Black Swan.
Yes.
The Black Swan.
Or the Johnson account.
I don't want to look up a picture for that.
Hey guys, we should call this one the Johnson account. Guys, we should call this one the Johnson account.
Oh, that mooner. That mooner.
Actually, that would be a really great way to kill a nickname that you hated, is that you have fully adopted, and then you just won't stop.
Oh,
then
my God. Here is the picture I am using for... Once, Brad, I'm sending this to you in AIM. This is the picture I'm using for the title of our podcast, The Johnson Account.
Oh, no. I didn't look at the title.
I Googled The Johnson Account, and this is one of the pictures that came up.
All right, now I got to see this.
Now I'm Googling Johnson Account. That's the third time today.
Google The Johnson Account, and then go to images.
Only Brad laughed at that.
Wow, what's the image? There's a lot of dumb things here.
It's the top right one of that dude in the glasses. You see it?
Yes.
Just meh.
He's the Johnson account.
Jeez, right. Brad. You all right?
You're tired. It's 4 a.m. in Philadelphia.
All right, guys. Let's end this
all
tonight.
All right, okay.
All right, boys.
Nah, Webcomics Weekly.
Bad. All right, I'm stopping recording now.